to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
A warm welcome to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcoury.
And I'm Shirley Heyman.
Now, this week we received an email from a Parent Show listener to ask us about Tourette's syndrome and an experience she's been going through. So to react to that, we've decided to dedicate the show this week to Tourette's syndrome. And it's a very sensitive subject, and we plan to speak about all dimensions to the issue and how to get the best possible support for your child.
And to help us do that tonight, firstly, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Jeremy Stern, who's the senior consultant neurologist from the Tourette's Clinic at St. George's Hospital. And then after Dr. Jeremy, we are going to speak to Suzanne Dobson. And Suzanne Dobson is the head of the Tourette's Action.
As promised, we're dedicating the whole show this evening to Tourette's syndrome. And our first expert is Dr. Jeremy Stern, who is a senior consultant neurologist from the Tourette's Clinic at St. George's Hospital. Good evening, Dr. Stern.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening. We've got the first question is, can you tell us exactly what Tourette's syndrome is?
Yeah, well, I think most people are aware that when they say other people with little habits, as they're often called, or tics or twitches, the word we use is tic. And Tourette's syndrome is simply a combination of these tics, but not only movement tics, also noises that people make involuntarily. And it comes on in childhood, and it can range from very mild to very severe, the kind of thing that you see with patients who appear on TV programs. And in fact, if you include all these severities, including very mild ones, it actually accounts for about 1% of children at school. So the thing is that the features can vary quite a lot from person to person, and there can be different things as well as the tics, like, for instance, obsessions and compulsions and ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So it's rather different from patient to patient, but the core are these tics, and everybody will know people with tics. You only have to sit on a bus to see people with tics, and many people will have these tics without them really bothering them. And other people, it will be far more of a problem.
So, Jeremy, good evening. You say that, you know, it's 1%, did you say, of children in school?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound to me, as a layman, very many. But, you know, who is susceptible to it, or can one not say that, really?
Well, any child can develop Tourette syndrome, but the main susceptibility factor that we're aware of is a family history. So it does often run in families.
Okay.
And the children we see in the clinic, and also adults, will very often have other members of the family who have tics, which might be very mild, or other features like the obsessions and compulsions, the OCD that I mentioned.
Right.
And do they go hand in hand, or can they happen without each other? Is it often a case that if you've Tourette's, you've ADHD, or not?
Well, that's a very good question. We know from a study of over 3,000 patients from around the world that only 12% of them only had tics. And the rest of them did have other features, for instance, ADHD and OCD and so on. Of course, this is a bit biased because these were gathered from patients that had gone to a clinic. There are other people who have mild tics and Tourette syndrome who are going about their business having successful lives and never seeing a doctor about it. They might be a bit less likely to have these other associations, but actually they can also have that. So there are some people for whom the tics are not the main thing. So the tics are what we talk about in Tourette syndrome. But there are some patients where they might just have mild tics, but the main problem for the child is the ADHD or other features.
So is it possible to tell if we think, you know, our child has Tourette syndrome, do you think? Or could we muddle it with other things?
Well, that's interesting, because very many parents and adults do diagnose their children or themselves after seeing TV programs or reading about it on the internet and so on. And in my experience, those people who have diagnosed themselves or their child are usually correct. However, having said that, I think clearly there is a place for a formal medical diagnosis. And there are other causes of involuntary movements apart from tics, although tics are probably more common.
And Dr. Stern, is there a specific age when it's more likely to emerge?
Yes, it's most likely between the age of 5 and 7 is the peak time, but it can be younger. And it can be older. in theory, it doesn't start after the age of 18, although in some cases it does. But the majority are really somewhat younger than that.
And, you know, do you think that the children and the people who suffer from it, can they be fully cured, or is it, you know, part of their character and personality that's always going to be there?
I think the important thing to say is that it often gets better naturally.
Okay.
So it's not so much a medical cure, but for many children, the worst age for tics is around 11 or 12, and it will often ease off a bit after that. Of course, there are adults who have bad Tourette syndrome, and they're the ones who come to the clinics to see adult doctors like me.
Mm.
So it will often get better. It probably doesn't go away completely. And people probably cope with it better as they get older as well. But the important thing from our perspective from the clinic is to make sure that children are getting the best advantage out of their education at the time when the tics are worse. Because if it really gets in the way then, as they get older, even though the tics are better, then they're left a bit behind. So I think there is definitely a cause to be positive about this for a lot of the patients. So if you've
Right.
found that your child's been given a diagnosis of Tourette's, it doesn't mean that it's going to be the same as the point it's diagnosed. It may well get better with time, and that's usually the expected outcome.
Okay.
And what exacerbates it, Dr. Stern?
All kinds of things, because the movements depend on the state of your brain. So if you're feeling stressed, they tend to be worse. If you're feeling bored, they tend to be worse. But if you're absorbed into something, really concentrating on something, often playing music or perhaps playing video games or sport or exercising, the tics tend to be a lot better. So they fluctuate a lot through the day. And most children and parents and adults with Tourette's get to know the things that set them off and the things that make them better. And for some patients, this can vary from one person to another. So, for instance, with driving a car, there are some people where the concentration of driving just makes the tics go away and they're absolutely fine.
Right.
And there are other people where the driving seems to set off the tics and they almost can't drive. So this does vary from person to person, but the biggest one is probably stress. When you're feeling stressed and anxious, they tend to be worse.
Can I just clarify something, Dr. Stern? So if we're looking at a child's timeline, between 5 and 7, you said, is a kind of a quite an often time when it emerges and it reaches a bad point at around 11. In the meantime, can it kind of go away for a bit, get a lot better, or how is it, I know you can't generalise, but what is a typical pattern?
Up to a point, because as well as these fluctuations caused by what you're happening to be doing at any particular moment, it does tend to go up and down in severity for reasons that we don't fully understand. So some weeks and months can tend to be better than other weeks and months. And as you said, there are some people where the tics seem to almost go away as far as they're concerned, and then they may come back again. So it is variable in that sense. One thing that's being researched across Europe at the moment is the effect of streptococcal, which is a bacteria bug, streptococcal throat infections. And there's some evidence that this can trigger off Tourette's in some people, and perhaps infections can cause exacerbations.
Wow.
But there are many times where we don't really have an explanation for why it's got better or worse.
One of the issues that often comes up on the parent show for us is that diet has an impact on so many different things for children. You know, do you think there's any correlation between diet, that you're introducing something new, or suddenly, I don't know, you know, between that and the onset of Tourette's?
Well, it's a difficult one from a doctor's perspective.
Yeah.
Because we don't have real data to suggest that diet has much of an influence. But there are many, many parents who will mention dietary factors that they feel affect their children. I expect that the classic one will be fizzy drinks, which I think parents will often say will trigger off ADHD as well. You know, it's very hard to disagree with what a parent's saying about their child, but it's very difficult to get the scientific evidence to prove this because of these fluctuations from time to time and the differences between one patient and another. It's very difficult to get the proof that any particular diet is having an impact, but we don't have information to actually show that.
And is there any cure for it? I mean, is there any medication that can be used, any kind of therapies? What do you generally use with your patients?
Well, there's nothing that I would call a cure, and I'm afraid that applies to quite a lot in medicine and neurology in general. But there are medicines that can help. Now, these medicines are not marketed for Tourette syndrome. They tend to be drugs that are used for other things, and we also use them for tics. But the main group we use, or one of the main groups we use, are drugs that block dopamine, a chemical in the brain. And these drugs are actually the same drugs that are used for psychosis and schizophrenia. It's obviously quite scary. But there's no clinical link between having Tourette syndrome and having schizophrenia. It's just that the same drugs, often in lower doses,
right,
can work. And in children, where we want to avoid those drugs, and particularly if they've got ADHD, we use another type of drug called clonidine, which affects a different chemical in the brain. And there's another of medications as well. They're quite variable from patient to patient, so it's often a question of trying to see what suits them best, and often it will help, but it doesn't cure. And I'd also like to mention that there are non-drug options. There are cognitive behavioral treatments which are delivered by psychologists to help people train their brain to have less tics effectively. But the problem is that we lack these specialized psychologists to actually give the treatment. So we have a treatment, we have evidence for it that it works, but it's very difficult to provide it in most parts of the country.
And how long does it take to diagnose a case of Tourette's? And I mean, is there a certain period of time that has to be prevalent before it can be called Tourette's?
Yes, according to the diagnostic criteria, the condition has to have been there for a year before you can diagnose Tourette's. So that would be vocal tics and motor tics. But these diagnostic criteria are not based on what we know about the biology of Tourette syndrome. They're actually defined by a committee, literally defined by a committee.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, if somebody looks very much like they've got Tourette syndrome, it's likely to carry on beyond the year and meet that formal diagnosis.
Right.
But in theory, you shouldn't really say somebody has Tourette syndrome until they've had the tics for a year.
But that must be quite difficult for parents who have their strong suspicions,
yes,
around the,
yeah,
8-9 month,
yeah,
mark, and they know they've got to wait 3 months before it's,
yeah,
formalised.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done before then?
Well, first, can I just backtrack a bit and,
sure,
say there are other tic disorders apart,
absolutely,
from Tourette syndrome, and actually there's an even more common disorder called transient tic disorder, and this is very common, particularly in boys, and in fact Tourette's is far more common in boys than girls. And these are children who have tics, usually just motor tics, not a combination of motor and vocal tics, and they just go on for a bit and get better. And actually quite a high percentage of boys go through that phase, and I'm sure many parents have noticed that. So back to your question, if a child, you know, looks like they have Tourette syndrome, they have a combination of motor and vocal tics, the decision about treating them isn't really dependent on having this diagnosis, you know, according to what's written in a book.
Mm.
If they've got bad tics or other symptoms that need intervention, then the specialist doctors can still suggest medication or other forms of treatment to try and help with that, because it would be artificial to wait for a year. We wouldn't wait for a year before,
no,
treating if necessary. But very often, in less severe cases, it's just coming and hearing about the diagnosis and talking about it and understanding it is what's required, and they don't necessarily need to have tics treated if they're mild.
Thank you. That's really interesting. We hadn't sort of seen that at all in the research we've been doing. I'm just wondering, you know, say you've got a little chap that's, parents are thinking maybe he's got Tourette's, and, you know, is there any kind of link between then how he's going to perform at school with suddenly the onset of, you know, motor and verbal tics? Should they be worried that, you know, his kind of cognitive abilities are going to go down, or?
Well, as far as cognition itself goes, that tends to be fairly normal in Tourette syndrome. There are some subtle changes on that research psychologists can show us, but it doesn't necessarily have a big effect on schooling.
Right.
For instance, people with Tourette syndrome have the same range of IQ as people without Tourette syndrome. But having said that, if you go to special educational needs schools, the number of children who have Tourette's and tics in those settings is higher than in normal education. And the reason for this is that Tourette's is also a bit more common in people who have learning difficulties. But the other problems with the condition, the ADHD, is what can get in the way. And if a child has bad tics, it's difficult for them to cope with, and perhaps they're being teased. I hate to say that can happen sometimes, or the teachers don't deal with it very well. Clearly it can get in the way, and what we need to do is to facilitate that child's education as much as we can within the constraints of the system, and that may include treatment of the different elements of the condition, sometimes going into the school, we have literature for teachers and so on. So it's difficult to give a complete answer to the question for every child. Now, of course, there are some children where this is a problem, and we try to help, and there are other children who are absolutely fine. but the cognition isn't actually the main problem.
Okay. Just one last question before we let you go, Dr. Stern. Are MRIs generally used to diagnose it or is it always face-to-face just by consultant seeing? Is it very clear from seeing a child if they have it or not?
Yes, it's generally clear by seeing the child and talking to the parents. MRI scans aren't very useful in this setting because they would tend to be normal on an individual basis. So if you do a scan on somebody with Tourette's syndrome, it won't give you the diagnosis. We occasionally need to do one if we're concerned that the cause actually isn't Tourette's syndrome and it could be another far less common condition that could look a bit like Tourette's syndrome. That's a relatively unusual situation. But there's really no need to do scans routinely if clinically the diagnosis is Tourette's syndrome.
Okay, Dr. Stern, thank you so much for joining us this evening. That's been really invaluable.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
92.6 FM.
Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Tonight's show is all about Tourette's syndrome and we've just spoken to Dr. Jeremy Stern. And now, in just a second, we'll be talking to Suzanne Dobson, who is the Chief Executive of Tourette's Action. Suzanne, are you there?
I am indeed.
Thanks a million for joining us this evening.
Suzanne, thank you so much, as Lydia says. So I don't know if you heard, but we sort of asked parents to email in or, you know, contact us and give us some questions, some worries, that kind of thing. So I've got one. Is it okay if I just read it to you?
Yeah, just fire
away. Thank you, and then we can have a chat. So the first sort of story that comes in says, my nearly 8-year-old boy has had simple motor tics for 7 months, one tick at a time. At the beginning of June, he suddenly declined in lots of areas. The tics now are very frequent. They can be every 3 seconds, and he likes touching certain edges, sort of sharp things. At the same time, the parents feel that his cognitive function has declined. He talks at them. He's not interested in what other people are saying. He's often not replying. And his general level of talking is lower, as though he was a younger child again. Okay, mm-hmm. So lots in there.
Oh, yes.
Is that all right? You heard all
yes,
of that?
I did hear all that.
Great.
I guess one of the things that Dr. Stern said to you was that tics do change all the time. Sometimes they're low frequency, sometimes they're high frequency, and that's one of the difficult things, that Tourette's is always surprising. But if mum feels that something's really altered with his Tourette's, then it might be worth taking him back to whoever diagnosed him, just so they can rule out all sorts of other things as well.
I'm not sure that this child has actually been diagnosed.
I don't think he has been diagnosed. I think that's the issue. This is a concerned mother who fears her son has Tourette's.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, the first thing she really needs to do then is to take her lad through her GP, and then if the GP rules out other things and he thinks that it may be Tourette syndrome, then to refer them on to a specialist consultant. And if they contact our helpline, we can give them a list of Tourette specialist consultants in the UK that she can take along to her GP and then ask him to refer to one of those, because that's the best way. And I mean, it's best to get the diagnosis, because then you know exactly what it is you're dealing with. It can help at school, because then you can sort of start to talk to school about what it is, the things that help, the things that aren't helpful, and to start to put all those things in place for him. So, you know, lots of parents are saying, oh, I don't want to get a diagnosis, I don't want to label my child. But it's really not about labelling. It's about actually knowing what you're dealing with and ruling out other things. And if you don't want to tell anybody else, you needn't. So you're not labelling him at all. But actually, for school to know and to be able to put things in place is really, really helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the touching sharp edges, you know, is sometimes common with people who have Tourette's syndrome. They're drawn to things that they know they shouldn't be.
Oh, okay.
So it might be sharp edges.
Yeah.
One chap I know, middle-aged chap, actually has big snakes and tarantulas and things.
Mm.
And actually he had to get rid of them because he kept encouraging them to bite him.
Oh, Lord.
So there is this sort of slightly...
risk-taking.
Yes, yeah. pretty risky.
Yeah.
But then if mama's got him into the system and they're talking to the specialists, then they can help him to talk about those things and to help him come up with strategies not to do it, which is really very important, I think.
So is it possible to have a normal life and have Tourette's?
Yeah, I mean, lots and lots of people have normal lives and Tourette's. You just have to work things round a bit. I guess it's a bit, what do you define by normal? You know, I think people in wheelchairs can have really normal, happy, fulfilled lives. But perhaps that wouldn't be what some people regarded as normal. So with Tourette's, it usually starts about the age of 7, which I guess you've already heard, probably peaks about 13. And then for about 50% of children, it starts to go into decline as they get nearer to late teens. And so, they will go on to have as normal a life as any of the rest of us. It doesn't affect IQ.
Right.
So it doesn't mean that they are less intelligent or more intelligent than the rest of the population. And so that's the real thing in school, is to keep children engaged with school and keep school engaged with the children so they can reach their potential.
So can I just kind of recap then? Do you agree with what we've sort of found out so far, that it's genetic?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be made worse by stress?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're in a stressful learning environment, that's not going to help you, is it?
No. And so, you know, if you're in an environment in school where everybody knows, and you can just do some of your little ticks and nobody takes any notice.
Right, okay.
That's really good.
Yeah, so it's definitely worth the parent talking to the teachers and
Absolutely.
Saying that. Just try and ignore it.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as possible, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, the mother's also said some psychological issues are coming to the surface too. My son fairly often says, naughty me, hitting his head with a fist. Sometimes he says why he thinks he's naughty. For example, he bought a different drink than the one his mom asked him to bring and he feels guilty about it. And is there any kind of therapy for this side, from the psychological side of things? Or what
well,
is your opinion?
I think possibly what he's feeling is a little bit anxious because he doesn't know why he's doing these things, so I suspect that might be making him feel a bit anxious and wanting to take a step back a bit when he was a bit littler and life seemed a little bit more simple. I guess you've spoken about medication for Tourette's and that he's actually quite young for medication, but there are psychological therapies, part of cognitive behaviour therapy, where clinical psychologists work with the young people to get them to either convert their tics into something that doesn't harm them, or to maybe teach them some strategies to actually suppress them for a while. So, like while they're at school or something. Slight downside of that is that he's likely to go off like a rocket when he gets home, because you know, home's safe and he can be himself there and things. So that's something that often parents tell us, that when they pick their children up from school, they have this sort of tic fest for about an hour while everything calms down.
I just
wonder, looking at this, when he says naughty me, it's that he's doing and saying things that he perhaps knows, you know, he shouldn't. And I don't know. It's hard to tell, isn't it? But I suspect that he's just feeling very confused.
If say the mum does decide to take her 8-year-old to see somebody, do you think that it's important she explains why they're doing it and what's happening, or does she just take him along kind of with no knowledge of what's happening?
Well, I was talking to a mum about this on the phone today, and I said I thought that she ought to explain it, but in a really low key way.
So what would you say then, Suzanne?
I would say something along the lines, oh, you know you've been doing these little noises and sounds and things, and I think what we need to do is just go along to the doctors and let him have a quick look at you and see if we can sort it out.
Right.
And just like that, because I think probably quite scary to pitch up a hospital if you don't know why you're why you're going to be there.
Yeah.
She needs to be prepared for him not to do any of his little things while he's there, because the children sort of are on their best behaviour. So I often recommend that mum makes a bit of secret video on her phone or something.
Okay.
To show the,
that's
to
a good
show
idea.
The doctor.
Mm.
Great. And Suzanne, have you heard of the neurofeedback method?
Well, I think that's a sort of rough approximation of what I was talking about, which is cognitive behaviour therapy. And it's where the older people who are much more articulate explain that before you do a tick, you get an urge to do it. And it's a bit like us knowing we're going to sneeze, but that's quite a crude approximation. And then clinical psychologists can work with you that when you catch that feeling, to turn it into something else rather than the tick that's very disruptive or might hurt you. And I think that's what she means by neurofeedback.
Right. And so would the person, a consultant that you refer to, then refer you for CBT, or how do you get CBT?
I mean, basically, if you go along to the consultant, they will talk to you and your child and discuss what it is. And then they'll suggest that you go to CAMHS, which is Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, which, although Tourette's isn't a mental health issue, a lot of the manifestations of it can be treated in that setting, which is often more local to home, which is a lot easier on the family. So there's this stage. You go for diagnosis. And then the clinician that you see then will talk about the most sensible treatment for you or your child, be that medication or cognitive behaviour therapy. I mean, the big problem in the UK is that there aren't enough trained clinicians to deliver cognitive behaviour therapy quickly. But the ones that we have got are really good.
And Suzanne, I'm just thinking as a mum, and as this mum indeed, who suspects her child has Tourette's, I mean, it'll probably take a while for him to be diagnosed and get to the point where he's getting therapy or treatment. Is there anything you would recommend she could do holistically in the meantime, like maybe cut down play dates, don't bring him to certain places, avoid stress? She should probably herself try to be as kind of, I suppose, try not to let him worry, because if he sees that he's worrying her, you know.
Yeah, I mean, children pick up instantly if their parents are anxious about anything, you know, from needing a new tyre on the car.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say to a mum, you know, don't let your child see you're anxious about them.
Absolutely.
But I mean, if she can, it would be good if she can be more relaxed about it. Certainly, don't keep picking him up on it. Don't keep saying, don't do that.
Right.
Stop that. Why are you doing that? There are loads of good books written about Tourette's that mum might like to read that have some suggestions in them. There's a really good book that you can get on that well-known book retailer in the sky.
Yeah.
And it's called Why Do You Do That?
Okay.
And it's written for young people, and it answers that sort of playground question.
Ah.
Why do you do that? And he's probably a little bit young to have the book on his own at the moment, but certainly for mum to go through it with him and to read it herself. And then there are obviously some more detailed books that she might want to read. And just start to look at what if she thinks makes him worse, and it's bound to be some sort of stress. Make sure things are going okay at school, that he's not being fallen out with his best friend or something like that. I think it's really important to keep the children that he's friendly with and accept him just who he is and for what he does, not to cancel play dates and things with them, because that's just going to be more anxiety-provoking, and it will not only make him feel sad, but it will make him appear different to his friends.
So yeah, which is what we're trying to avoid, really, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think to carry on in the most normal way, really. And, you know, what we've found is that, I mean, it's usually after diagnosis, but if you can talk to your child's class, and I know it sounds like a plug for Tourette's Action, but on the website there are some PowerPoints and things that you can download to use in school, then the children sort of become very protective of their friend. And, you know, and if somebody else says something, they say, leave him alone, he's got Tourette's, you know, which is quite nice.
Wonderful, but, yeah.
I don't think there's a plug at all, Suzanne. I think that's great that you shared that with us, because we know we have lots of teachers that listen in, and I think that's a brilliant resource, you know, for them to... I didn't know that that was available, so thank you.
And for them, there's a special leaflet called Key Facts for Teachers.
Oh, okay.
So, just go and have a roam around the website. And also for Mum herself, we have a forum on our website where she can register and chat to other parents of similar aged children and get some tips and reassurance. And we monitor that ourselves, so there's nobody on there.
Right.
We have volunteers who have Tourette's themselves, who are constantly monitoring the website, so we make it as safe an environment as we possibly can.
So do you want to just say that website once more for us?
I will. It's Tourette's Action website, which is www.tourettes-action.org.uk.
Thank you.
Just one quick question, Suzanne. Can it bang to the head at an earlier point in your life, or your head percentile have anything to do with Tourette's?
I've not come across that, but I think one of the consultants explained it to me really well. He said that because we know that Tourette's is genetically based, that you have this predisposition for Tourette's.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it just starts on its own, and sometimes it appears to be triggered by something.
Right.
So I was talking to a man in his 50s, a couple of weeks ago, and he'd recently had a stroke. And although he'd recovered from his stroke and he was doing really well, it had triggered the Tourette's. And so I couldn't say yes or no, really, to that question, because it's all a bit up in the air.
But thank you. You know, kind of, it to me, it sort of sounded like a very strange question, but I think I've been told something similar for diabetes as well, actually.
Yeah, you know, I think we have a lot of smoking guns.
So thank you, Suzanne. You know, it's so valuable, the kind of things you've shared with us this evening, and hopefully parents listening in will be able to take a lot away from what you've said.
Yeah, and I mean, as I say, you know, we have some local groups where they can go along to with their children and meet other children, because often children think they're the only person in the whole world who's like this, and the best thing they often say when they go to a group or camp or something is, I thought I was the only one. And you know, to know there's a whole gang of mates out there just like you is really fab, I think.
Very reassuring. And we just have one last question. Well, it's actually a statement from a second mother. She said, how can we parents cope with rages in a child who has Tourette's syndrome? My middle one can be triggered over what might be nothing, and any intervention, if not caught early, means it becomes an uncontrollable rage. At the moment, we can't seem to help him after it has started, and in these episodes, as he throws himself so violently around, he can occasionally hurt himself. The rages seem to be worst when he is tired or dehydrated, but not always. Basically, it would be good to be able to help him to understand them more and control them better, but I don't even know if that's possible. We're on the waiting list for GOS Hospital Tourette's Clinic, but I guess we'll eventually get some answers. But in the meantime, any guidance or information Yeah. On the internet seems very conflicting.
Yeah. Well, actually, they're heading to a really good place at Great Ormond Street. And if you look on the Great Ormond Street website and ours, they have got some really good documents about anger and rage and helping to control it. It is usually triggered by tiredness and, you know, just general exhaustion. But I guess the thing is to, and it sounds dreadful to say, don't continually avoid it. Don't give in to something that you don't believe you should give in to just because they're going to fly into a rage, because then, you know, like all children learn, don't they, that if they do this, then they'll get what they want and things. And so some of the same rules that you would apply to a child without Tourette's, you apply to a child with Tourette's. But you obviously have to make sure they're safe.
Yes.
Maybe when he's in a rage is to make it quite quiet, you know, sort of turn the telly off, make sure the games machine isn't going. Maybe give him, when he says he's feeling really angry, to make a space in his bedroom or dining room or I don't know, wherever, where he can't hurt himself. And maybe, you know, rather than kicking his little brother, he can kick a cushion or... It's just what talking... When the child isn't in a rage, is trying to talk to him and say, you know, how do you feel when you're in a rage? And obviously, if they're quite little, that will take quite some time because they have the language to explain it. And to say with them, what do you think would help? When you're starting to feel like that, you know, and if they say, oh, three bars of chocolate and a bowl of ice cream, then you say, well, that's not going to happen.
No.
That's not a good solution.
No.
How about I give you a great big beanbag to punch?
Yeah.
And go that sort of way, because unfortunately, sort of rage and anger, it does come a little bit with Tourette's as well. I think a Tourette's like a bit of an iceberg. The tics are the bit you see sticking out of the sea.
Okay.
And all the rest of it's underwater.
Oh, that's a good way of, you know, helping us to understand it.
Yeah.
I just do you think it's important as well for parents to talk to the siblings of the child that's having the tics, you know, to help them have coping strategies, take away any fear, not tease their sibling, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. I think there are two things. One, they need to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
They need to understand that it isn't catching, and actually
right.
All children at school and things need to know that just because you're friends with them or gave them a hug or something, it's not like a cold. It's not.
Mm.
Nobody's going to catch it. It's really, really tough for siblings of... well, we know it's tough for siblings of children who've got anything, you know, as well as Tourette's. And, you know, sometimes it will go wrong and they will get really hacked off with their brother or sister. But that, I think, is perhaps growing up in a family. But it is important to talk to them about... why and why they do these strange things, and as I say, to reassure them that, you know, it's just because their brother's got it doesn't mean to say they're going to have it.
Great. Thank you so much, Suzanne, for joining
us
this evening. I think that's been really, really helpful. I'm sure our listeners will get a lot from that. So all the best and have a lovely evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave's Solicitors, your complete legal solution.